Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Monday, April 6, 2015, and on today's podcast, we're going to discuss the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or JCPOA, reached between the Islamic Republic of Iran and the P5 plus one nations, primarily the United States, regarding the Iranian nuclear program. Today, we will look at how these two nations, with such a long history of violence, intrigue, and mistrust, could sit down in the same room and hammer out an agreement. There are powerful forces in both countries that oppose the agreement, that want the agreement to fail, and both sides may or may not live up to the final terms. But as George Friedman pointed out, writing in Stratfor, quote, "There has been an agreement between the great Satan and a charter member of the Axis of Evil, and that matters," end quote. Yes, it matters. So let's look at what this agreement actually obligates each side to do or to refrain from doing. Number one, Iran has agreed to lower by approximately two-thirds its installed centrifuges. Iran has agreed to not enrich uranium over 3.67% for 15 years. Iran has agreed to reduce its stockpile of low-enriched uranium for 15 years. Iran has agreed to place all excess centrifuges and enrichment infrastructure in IAEA, that's the International Atomic Energy Agency, monitored storage. Iran has agreed to not build any new facilities for enrichment for 15 years, breakout time. That is the time it would take Iran to acquire enough material for one weapon. It is extended to 1 year, that period to exist for 10 years. So for the next 10 years, Iran is theoretically within 1 year of having at least one nuclear weapon. Iran will convert its facility at Fordow so that it can no longer enrich uranium. Iran will only enrich uranium at the Natanz facility for 10 years. The IAEA will have regular access to all of Iran's nuclear facilities, including Iran's enrichment facility at Natanz. Iran will ship all spent fuel out of the country for the reactor's lifetime. Iran will not build any additional heavy water reactors for 15 years. Iran will receive relief from all sanctions if it verifiably abides by its commitments. The architecture of sanctions will, however, remain for reapplication in the event of significant non-performance. UN Security Council resolution on the Iran nuclear issue will be lifted. Iran will remain a party to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which prohibits Iran's development of nuclear weapons. Well, when all is said and done, Iran can keep the enriched uranium that it has now, but it's limited in how much it can develop for at least 15 years. It's already a party to the non-proliferation agreement, and it's been cheating, so that means nothing. But the sanctions will be lifted. How does all this affect the regional balance of power in the Middle East? Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu criticized President Obama on the telephone, telling him that the new agreement, quote, threatens the survival of the State of Israel. President Obama, in turn, accused Mr. Netanyahu of urging the U.S. to avoid, quote, a peaceful solution. Does Mr. Netanyahu really believe that Iran is an immediate strategic threat to Israel, that this agreement threatens Israel's survival? If he does believe that, then is he not extremely remiss in his duties by not acting immediately to remove or at least reduce that threat? We have been hearing for at least 10 years that the Iranians are only a year or two from a nuclear weapon. No matter what deadline passes, the threat vector seems to go up. Israel has a very substantial military capability with or without U.S. support, including tactical nuclear weapons and the ability to deliver them on target. Israeli forces are far from Iran, but there are other nations, including the Gulf Arab states and Saudi Arabia, who are also hostile to Iran and very nervous about an Iranian nuclear weapon. These nations could possibly allow Israel to forward base aircraft in their territory and special forces personnel as well. To make the task easier, Israel has used the tools at its disposal to block or at least limit a U.S.-Iranian deal for quite some time. That apparently was Mr. Netanyahu's fear, the U.S. and Iran sitting down in agreement as somewhat friendly. Saudi Arabia, on the other hand, is the mortal enemy of Iran. And in fact, it is at war with an Iranian proxy in Yemen. Iran wants to dominate the Arabian Peninsula. That much is obvious. But the U.S. has been the guarantor of Saudi Arabia and its national security for many, many years. The U.S. understanding with Iran, if ultimately completed, threatens the Saudi royal family in the Arabian Peninsula. Could a U.S. end of the Saudi guarantee be a secret part of the deal? Time will tell, folks. The Saudi war in Yemen is the first indicator that the Saudis understand now that they must go it alone or find new alliances. Thus, Saudi efforts with nuclear-armed Pakistan, Turkey, would also benefit if the U.S. keeps its distance from Iran. The Turks fear Iranian dominance in the Levant. That means across Iran, Iraq, and Syria. In the final analysis, Turkey and Saudi Arabia will have to pay a far higher price than they ever have before for U.S. help. Now, they must come begging, not the other way around. The shoe is on the other foot. Finally, folks, a new game is started in the Middle East, a new game with new players. Old alliances are weakening, new ones being born. Iran is to have nuclear weapons, so Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, and Turkey, who knows how many others, must have them as well. But President Obama will get his trip, his legacy-building trip to Tehran that he has worked so hard for. At least that's the way I see it, folks. Until next time, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.